Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Samuel Adams Returns. Those anti-federalists nailed it, baby! They got it absolutely correct. And today we are going to talk about none other than Governor George Clinton of New York and, as he wrote, as Cato. But before we do that, let me do this. The title of the program is Out of Control Republic with Justice No More. We've seen that. You know, here it is. Look at this past week. We had all of the various co-conspirators with Donald Trump being booked. And I really appreciate those two to three that took and just smiled because they know this is absolutely bogus. And what Donald Trump said on Tucker, hey, didn't he steal the show on viewers? I'm telling you, the logs for Twitter were what? Over 33 million people viewed. Wow. I don't know. I didn't look at what was there for the status showing. But the fact is that I know it wasn't 33 million that watched those the comedy show Wednesday night on, what was that, Fox? Anyway, the important part that I want to bring here is that this republic is out of control. And as we're seeing, there's no justice. So we're going to talk about Alan Dershowitz's article. I'm going to bring you another article and actually an introduction to a book on the law in a very interesting response. I'll talk to you about that a little bit later in, I don't know, second segment. Most interesting. I have to laugh again. You know, I'm using this here in the newsletter at SamuelAdamsReturns.net over my shoulder, is that before we get into the meat of what we have going on, we have to move through the carrots and we have to go through the potatoes and the herbs and the gravy of 1996 when the U.S. began being governed by a de facto parliament. See the references. But isn't that what was brought up in the information in the articles that I've shared with you several times in the references that was utilized on January 6th was parliamentary procedure? And not only that, on the Tucker interview with President Trump, President Trump even brought that up about Mike Pence having the ability to turn all of the election results back to the states. But when all the confusion happened and they came back, a vote immediately occurred that took that power away from Pence under a parliamentary ruling that was voted on and with the majority of the enemy of this nation, that then they pushed through and took away the power of the vice president to ensure that the election results would go back to the states for research and revalidation. Okay, so I teased you enough for a moment, but let me do this. I'm not going to do it. I'm going to take you right into the anti-federalist Cato. I want you to understand, and what he was saying is that in large republics, the public good is sacrificed to 1,000 views. In a large one, in a large republic, there are men of large fortunes and consequently of less moderation. We see that even with Vic Swami or whoever else, or, you know, the Bush push and all of the other billionaires, multimillionaires that are what? Consequently of less moderation. Not only that, an ambitious person, Joe Biden, and others, what, soon become sensible or irrational in his case, that he may be happy, great, and glorious by oppressing his fellow citizens, and that he might raise himself to grandeur on the ruins of his country. George Clinton predicted that. George Clinton, he was the governor of New York. He was an anti-federalist. New York was one of the last to take and vote for the Constitution because of so many warnings. And if you go to the references, I have their anti-federalist number 14, which is the extent of territory under consolidated government too large to preserve liberty or protect property. Your property is no longer being protected. Your property is under absolute assault. Your thoughts are under absolute assault. That's your property according to the founder's definition. Your thoughts, your words belong to you. Not only that, so does your car, so does your ability to transport, ability to move, the ability to own physical property of every nature, but intellectual property as well. Your conscience is God-given and belongs to you. And that's what, in many ways, George Clinton, and later, as I've said last week, and we'll say again, it's in the notes on Brutus regarding law, regarding what would happen in the judiciary and how it would be corrupted, it's laid out. It was laid out and predicted from the very foundation of this nation. And wait till you read the article, and I talk about it probably in the second segment, maybe carry over into the third, of the what? De facto parliament that went into effect in 1996. So anyway, the remonstrance to the new constitution focuses on the consolidation of the independent republics into this national federal republic, which Cato predicts clearly, and here it is. Listen to this. Whoever seriously considers the immense extent of territory comprehended within the limits of the United States. And remember, at that time, we're only talking about the East Coast and not even Florida. Together with the variety of its climates, productions, and commerce, the difference of extent and the number of inhabitants in all, the dismultitude of interest, morals, and politics in almost every one, that's every one of the states, will receive it as an intuitive truth that a consolidated republic, a republican form of government therein, can never form a perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, promote the general good, and secure the blessings of liberty to you and your posterity. For to these objects it must be directed. So what he's saying right there is that these objects, everything that we just identified, and again, go to your notes to read it, everything that we just identified has to be directed by the government. And what's happening? Every aspect of this, justice is being directed and established, as Dershowitz talks about in his article, and we'll talk about that, is that it's being adjusted to one individual, two fingers, because there's what, 18 of them or however number that are being slam dunked on the injustice. So you have a Justice Department saying it is okay to go after persons that disagree in an unjust manner. Dershowitz has some stuff to say about that, and then I have some things to say about Dershowitz. Now, as we continue to go on with this, is that They're directed. All those objects are directed. General welfare, and that doesn't mean the welfare system. The secure blessings of liberty, that's being directed as well. This unkindred legislature, therefore, composed of interest opposite and dissimilar in their nature, will in its exercise emphatically be like a house divided against itself. A very biblical perspective, if you understand that. So here's the futuristic words relative to our present in totality, maybe. From this picture, what can you promise yourselves on the score of consolidation of the United States into one government? What does it happen? All comes together. Impracticability in the just exercise of it. We're seeing that. What's going on in the exercise of the federal government is impracticable. Your freedom is insecure. Even this form of government, limited, according to the Constitution, the employments of your country disposed of to the opulent, those billionaires, to whose contumely, and here it is, insolvent and insulting language or treatment. That's what contumely means. You will continually be an object of it. We are. Pay attention to the media. Pay attention to all these people that talk down to us and treat us with great insult. You must risk much by indispensably placing trust of the greatest magnitude into the hands of individuals whose ambition for power and aggrandizement will oppress and grind you. Where? From the vast extent of your territory and the complication of interests, the science of government will become intricate and perplexed and too mysterious for you to understand and observe. That's what's going on right now. You can't understand it. You have a hard time observing it, especially truth with all the nonsense media going on, and by which you are to be conducted into a monarchy. Well, if you got parliament that came in basically in 1996 and a parliamentary procedure was used to subvert the election on January 6th, then you're in a monarchy, either limited or despotic. The latter, Mr. Locke remarks, is a government derived from neither nature nor compact. No, despotic government is rooted in hell. It's devised by the enemy of everything that is foundationally truth and everything that is designed by God for good government. My friends, it is clear that we, the free, understanding, constitutional citizens of these United States, are objects receiving the continued contumely of the opulent, ambitious power mongers seeking aggrandizement through grinding oppression of our God-given rights. That's a lot to take in just in this first segment. The references are all there. It's Sam Adams Returns. The Anti-Federalist Got It Right. It's SamuelAdamsReturns.net. For those watching, it's over my left shoulder. It is important that you take and get involved. Understand there are no mysteries in government except that which you allow, and you must be more than observers. You must become participants. You must understand, as we'll talk about and have talked about in past programs, you got to understand how to stand up against tyrants. And what does that mean from a true biblical perspective for those that believe in that? Otherwise, like Dershowitz, you have to understand it from an Old Testament moral perspective in law. Come on back for the next segment. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for joining me in this second segment of Samuel Adams Returns. The Anti-Federalists absolutely got it correct. And this is Tom Navulis, your host, if I didn't mention in the first segment. Let's jump right back into it because we got a lot going on. We've seen that here we have a former president being indicted four times because of an injustice system. So when I titled the program regarding the Republic, is that that's out of control with justice no more. And then when I referenced that, it's obvious that the system is manipulated against all of those who are not the Marxists, who are not the favored of the parliament or the king, and any of those that are behind the puppet king. So what we have is then Cato continuing, if I may, which I am, no question asked. Cato continues in this, is that the freedom, equality, and independence which you enjoyed by nature induced you to consent to a political power. You consent to it. You have to understand that all of this operates by consent. That's the way God designed it. So the same principles that led you to examine the errors and the vices of the British superintendent, to divest yourselves at that time, and to reassume a new political shape, it is acknowledged that there are defects in this and another intended for you for acceptance. So we had the Articles of Confederation, and people are saying, oh, there's defects in that. And now you have this Constitution of 87 being presented, and you have to ask yourselves the great question then that arises on this new political principle. This is a shift in political principles for this Constitution of 87, is whether it will answer the ends for which it is said to be offered to you. Quite frankly, we're finding out, as here Cato talks about it, it's not doing what the founders intended, except in a very small little window, and for which all men engaged in political society, to wit, the preservation of lives, liberty, and estates. Well, we're not seeing that. Lives, abortion, are being destroyed. Lives, children, are being mutilated and destroyed. Lives are not being preserved under the foundational fundamentals of a moral society. Liberties out the window with this republic, with this nation. And estates, your property? Yeah. Between the taxation and then, as I talked about in the first segment, your intellectual property, your conscience is under absolute assault by this government. But was it in a constitutional government? What is it? What is this? What's in it? Or just the civil society, as it's talked about here, that Cato brings to bear in the common parlance of the time? What was it in the founding era compared to today on how we define a political society? So I'm going to refer you once again, and it's there in your notes, to go to Original Civil Government, a biblical examination of its origins and jurisdiction with the Lonang Institute by Kerry Morgan. Here's just a quote for you from that, and then go on. Is that when we speak of civil government, we mean none of these governmental structures or of nations. Okay, civil government. We mean that civil structure of organized government using force and coercion through its various branches to accomplish control and regulation, all undertaken in the name of securing public safety and public morals. Now, are the morals being what? Taken care of? No. No, they're taken in now. It's the immorals, the other morals, the false morals, the godless morals that are in public safety. You have criminals running rampant. In fact, under the Biden administration, you've been bringing in a million plus criminals into the nation. Everyone that crosses that border is a criminal. They violated our immigration law. I don't care what anybody says. They are criminals, period. Hope you, I know you that listen to the program, get it. But the majority of people still are a bunch of dense dudheads when it comes to understanding that. These structures are generally called the state or the government. John Locke described the purpose of civil government and its exercise of political power, declaring that political power, then, I take to be a right of making laws with penalties of death and consequently all less penalties for the regulating and preserving of property and of employing the force of the community in the execution of such laws and in the defense of the commonwealth from foreign injury, and all this only for the public good. And that is out of John Locke, Second Treatise of Civil Government, Chapter 1, Section 3, from 1690. So I beg you to go back and look at the foundational understanding of government, and I've talked about this more and more in the past over and over. Now let's jump into and get into the idea, and we'll finish up into the third segment with this as well, regarding no more justice. So Dershowitz writes a great article that came out, I think, on last Wednesday, Tuesday, Wednesday of this week. And he wrote this, let me quote just a portion of it, in his Justice Requires Fair Procedures. And that's in your notes. You can follow the link to it. Justice, justice you shall pursue. The Bible commands in Deuteronomy 16:20, and that in doing justice, one must not recognize faces. Commentators ask why the Good Book repeats the word justice, since every word is thought to have significance. The most relevant is that there are two kinds of justice, substantive justice and procedural justice. The former relates to making the punishment fit the crime. The latter requires that correct procedures be employed to determine whether a criminal has been committed or a crime has been committed. The late Supreme Court Justice Felix Frankfurter, side note from me, who we know was a socialist, once observed that the history of liberty is largely a history of procedural fairness. Our Constitution embodies that history by reading, quote, the due process of law, end quote. That's in the Constitution. Lastly, however, many so-called progressives have been willing to ignore procedural safeguards and due process in their campaign to get former President Donald Trump, to misuse the law in an effort to prevent the leading Republican candidate from running against the incumbent candidate for president. In doing so, they are violating the second principle of justice. Do not recognize faces. That commandment is the basis for the blindfolded statue of justice. Well, let's just get to this, and I really appreciate Dershowitz's appeal that these and other Get Trump lawyers should read the Judeo-Christian commandments, and this is, again, a quote from Dershowitz, and he says here that they should read the Judeo-Christian commands to do procedural as well as substantive justice and not to recognize faces. But let me make a comment here on this article before I go on to something else from the book that I wanted to talk to you about. We'll cover that in the third segment. Is that there's not a lot that I'm putting in here, but let's face it, 100 years ago, when we started bringing in, and more than 100 years ago, in the mid to late 1800s, when humanism came into effect, when socialism came into America, when all of these isms, and this goes all the way back to Unitarianism in the mid to late 1700s, we quit understanding these biblical principles and truths. So I appreciate Dershowitz saying, hey, where are the Republicans? Where are the conservatives? Where are those in law school, and where are the prosecutors that should be looking and reading the Judeo-Christian commands to do procedural justice? Because they're not. They're destroying it to use that singular injustice as a format for justice against Donald Trump. Folks, Mr. Dershowitz, Professor Dershowitz, come on, you're smarter than me, and you well know that when humanism and all anti-God biblical concepts were destroyed in the 60s, when the Bible and these Judeo-Christian concepts were taken out of education, they were removed from law and law schools. How can you think in your appeal that lawyers, let alone anybody else within that system, Department of Justice, would ever dare crack open to Deuteronomy or elsewhere in the scriptures? Now, do justice. Justice is a cry, is a plea, is something wonderful that you defined in the way that you did on that separation of substantive and procedural. They're not going to do procedural. They won't ever read this because their minds have no framework to it. They do not see the foundational framework of this Judeo-Christian command. So I find the expectation that Professor Dershowitz has there, great mind. I've come to appreciate him. He's probably one of the very few classical liberal professors in law. I mean, there's others. Remember, I really appreciate all of the professors, attorneys at Lonang, as well as there are some out there in other universities. But for the most part, there is no teaching on this differentiation of substantive and procedural from a Judeo-Christian perspective. I did a cursory look at law schools and the courses and what it is in morality and law, and looking at where does a lot of that fit together. I was looking at where humanists might be looking at the different concepts. I was also looking at an article that I downloaded. And actually, it's the title of a book, The Philosophy of Legal Change, by two Polish authors, which is extremely interesting. And we're going to get into that as we go to the third segment. But let me just take for a moment and in these last couple of segments, tease you with this idea that if we take an approach, natural law theories, we examine political philosophy as integrated with jurisprudence, and even the simple part of it. We believe that law is not natural to political philosophy. Rather, deep normative structure of law contains political philosophical elements. We're going to get into that. a lot of technical speak in there, but it gets down to the morality of it that Sam Adams clearly understood because he was a lawyer. Not. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to this last segment of Samuel Adams Returns. This is Tom Novoulos, your host. And I do highly recommend that those that are only listening to the first and third segment go and get into that second segment and what I talk about with Professor Dershowitz and the article that he wrote in relationship to the procedural perspective of what is going on, and that all these attorneys that are out there, and you're never going to get the leftist attorneys to do it, but all those anti-Trumpers, and a lot of them are political attorneys, if you will, should look at the Judeo-Christian perspective on procedural law. Not gonna happen, because it's not been taught for 100 years. Plus. So go check that out. And I did want to talk to you just real quickly on this book, and I'm only going through portions of the introduction because I haven't read the whole book. There's a lot there. But just in the introductions, it gives you a sense and feel of what's going on in the legal environment, the legal mindsets for a good number of years, as well as to why we see this mix, mush, mash of these Marxist nutcases doing things. And this book is written by two Polish authors, law professors, that have taken a really interesting look and perspective on the approach of what is going on, and they even talk about some of the things that happened in Polish communism, so on and so forth. So I think I'm going to be interested. Actually, I don't think. I know I'm going to be interested in reading the whole book if I ever get my hands on a full copy of it. This portion of what I have, which is about 64 pages, I provide the link for you to go read the whole thing for yourself. But these are my snippets. What I'm taking out of it for my context in this program doesn't represent all of the thought that they have here, but they are saying that if moral and political justifiability of laws play a role in their legitimacy and social acceptance, interesting, then the law, because that's where we're at. Think about that. We're seeing this moral twisting and political justifiability of the laws, or of the laws being misused. They go on to say, then the law and political philosophy are integrated simply by the token of social practice. Now we're seeing that as we see all of the perverts come out in parade and performance. We're seeing then that the law and political philosophy are integrated in that token of social practice. The members of society, when making sense of and applying law, inevitably use political, philosophical ideas as a point of reference, even if implicit. So alternatively, and I appreciate this, their approach, our approach, has a completely different purpose than the approach represented by natural law theorist or Dworkin. The goal is neither to look for universally just, moral, or right legal solutions and decisions, nor to seek the best interpretation of legal norms or precedents. Focusing on the legal change, we look at the underlying reason in a neutral way. Prima facie, we do not support any concrete political philosophical position, but by examining the relationship between the new legal norms and their justification, we try to create a tool for a better understanding of law. In the perspective adopted in this book, political philosophy plays the role of a relatively neutral heuristic tool which, connected with legal dogmatics, allows for better interpretation and justification of the law. I appreciate what they're saying, but let's read the next paragraph because I want to take that into account because I think it's important in that. The perspective of political philosophy allows for examining the moral and political justification of legal change on the one hand without definitely answering the theoretical question about the law's nature as such, and on the other hand without giving up serious considerations of real connections between law and political morality that undoubtedly occur. In this regard, the approach adopted in this work is closer to the distance view of social science. Political philosophy applied to considering a reason for legal change makes a bridge between legal dogmatics that essentially establish the content of norms and social science that examine how these norms in work practice. Examining the justification of norms, political philosophy, on the one hand, sheds some light on the content, puts them in a wider context of normative beliefs. On the other, indicates some predictions as to their functioning in practice, because the functioning of the law in practice assumes that the law can be understood, applied, and internalized by its subjects. That is well stated. Now, I go on, and there are general theories and all of that that they're working on from an application in this comes back to the questions of what is law? Where does it come from? Where is its derivatives? And how does it function within the context of society for a moral people? And for us in these United States, what is the framework and the foundational underlying that is there, the foundation from a constitutional perspective? That constitutional perspective going back all the way to Magna Carta, going back in so many different ways to everything that happened at Magdeburg, and then absolutely going back to everything that happened at Calvary and everything that was created in Genesis. None of that, as I can tell from these gentlemen, is taking that necessarily into the context which is applicable for what Dershowitz talked about, Judeo-Christian principles of law. Now, I think that we have a lot going on. Humanism, the appeal of humanism in law, of all of the other various isms, as we see the political aspects of what is happening in all four Trump indictments, or do you do it this way, is four for those on the video. All four of the indictments are politicized without question. So going back to these Polish professors and their perspective on it, when it comes to how does it affect a nation and how is a law being applied from a new generalized societal perspective when you have at some foundational point, a Judeo-Christian mechanism for law, as Dershowitz talks about. I mean, he goes there between even just if you segment it into the procedural and substantive portions. And law has to have fundamentals that just are not on the outside framework. Law, as is talked about in Judeo-Christian commands, is what happens internalized into the very essence and being of a person. Law is not just a skeleton. Law is not just bookends. Law is a framework given by God. Therefore, you can take and you can look at where do rights come from? How does that function? So when rights are they violated because of some societal norm, which we're seeing happening all the time, which we saw last week in Matt Truella's clip of his son-in-law being arrested because the external society is saying that perversion is now fully accepted, and those that are standing against the perversions are the lawbreakers. When in fact the laws on the books, and in particular to that instance in Wisconsin, the laws against perversion are very, very clear, and they have not been changed. So does that mean when we take a look at the book that I was just mentioning at the beginning of the program, is that does society now overrule the rule of law? Does the actions of society, and as Kozak puts it in the Kozak plan, is what? The rumblings from below, the pressure from below. Will that eventually change the laws on the books in Wisconsin? We've seen changes in laws in various places that are manipulating and moving from moral norms and changing those foundational moral norms to norms of immorality. Well, I want to finish up just real quick with something that I referred to you last week and a quote here from what Dershowitz was talking about, and the indictments of the co-conspirators down there in Georgia. I really have to say that I really appreciate what Rudy Giuliani said. And there's a link there at the website after his booking, and he takes it to heart, and you need to take this to heart as well. Here's what Giuliani said. Enemies of our republic are destroying rights, sacred rights. They're destroying my right to counsel, my right to be a lawyer. They're destroying his right to counsel, and I think he was meaning Trump. It's not accidental that they've indicted all as lawyers. Never heard of that before in America, he added. Rudy said, they're coming for all Americans. Trump said that before, too. Whether you dislike or you like Donald Trump, let me give you a warning. It's going to come for you when the political winds shift, as they always do. Let us pray that Republicans are more honest, more trustworthy, and more American than these people in charge of this government, Rudy said. Donald Trump told you this? They weren't just coming for him or me, he said. Wow. There's another articles that I have there and in the references you need to look at. But the fact is that if you don't stand up, if you don't get active, if you don't participate, if you do not understand foundational truth, then what's going to happen is these are coming after you. And the fact is that they indicted lawyers, all the various lawyers. Go look at all the different articles, even with Sidney Powell and the clamps they've put around her. Ladies and gentlemen, can you afford the lawyers that all these people can? No way. They're going to end up just like those in the J6 gulag. If you do not stand up against tyranny and put your money and your time where your shoe-throwing mouths are at the TV. You know, Sam Adams said, go away. Let the chains be heavy on you. Let the dogs eat you. That's my paraphrase. But Sam Adams said, you have to fight, and if you don't, shame on you. Come on back next week when Sam Adams returns. And yes, those anti-federalists did get it right.